From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm. Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Can't talk this morning. A couple days away from Super Bowl Sunday. Today on the show, we will do our normal chat with Ryan Brown, WJOX, the Roundtable out of Birmingham. It's probably college football, probably some NFL. I don't know. We'll see what we get into in a second with Ryan. Today on the show, we will spend a couple minutes on the CBS story on the transfers trying to gain immediate eligibility from Ole Miss. I feel like, speaking of Groundhog storylines, this is another one, as we probably aren't going to have the Andy Kennedy one today, but we will have the transfer one today. So
I don't know about you. I can't make it through one of those stories anymore. My brain literally just shuts off. It's been going on for like 12 years now, and I cannot finish that story.
Because I get about halfway through it, and it's not really even an Ole Miss thing. I get pissed off at the writing in them about halfway through, where I go, I live this every day. That's not the whole story. That is not the exact story. I don't know if there's anything else I've read over the last couple years other than this storyline that screams flyover writer as much as these do, where there's so many more intricacies of what happened here than just everything seen in one scope right down the middle.
That's why I love Andy Staples the way that I do. Andy Staples is a national writer.
Yeah.
And when he goes to these places, he doesn't pretend to be an expert. He'll basically tell you in his writing, hey, I'm not a beat writer. I don't cover Rutgers or Arizona State or Ole Miss or UCLA. And so I'm going to tell you about this particular story, and I'm going to give it as much context as I can.
Yeah, but there's going to be some details about, I don't know.
Yeah, and then I'm going to tell you about a great place to go get a burger.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep this on a simple level. If you want detail and nuance and complexity, drink up. If you want those things, you're probably going to have to go to people who follow the program every day.
And this is a story that's very hard to write without tons of background. And just a basic understanding, because you have to want to have that understanding. That story read yesterday like someone who doesn't want the understanding.
Well, they don't want the understanding.
They want it to be a big machine gun, blow.
And it comes out the week before signing day?
Yeah.
And we're not even hiding it anymore. There's so much here.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll go there in a second. Podcast brought to you by the Oxford Exxon. Remember, get those orders in for a rib Super Bowl Sunday. Two slabs, $22. Three slabs for $30. The Jamie Lynn Spears concert in Macomb is tomorrow night, so you can still get tickets for that at thehometownsessions.com. Also, at Eventbrite is offering tickets for that there in Macomb with Jamie Lynn. Blue Sky and Credit Gold, also the presenting sponsor of the FCA Breakfast on Ole Miss's campus, February 24th. Same day that Ole Miss has a home baseball game as well, so you may kind of make a day of it. In Oxford, Evan Ingram, New York Giants tight end, former Ole Miss All-American, is the special guest for that event. You can buy tickets at the FCA Ole Miss website for that cool thing they do every single year. So those things going on with the Oxford Exxon, and we're coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are. Clark Ford's in Amory, Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number, ask for Corey Clark, and tell Corey what new Ford you want. I know which new Ford I want, but Corey knows it as well. So call and tell Corey which new Ford you want. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It is that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. He's not going to screw you. I'm an example, because he could have screwed me, and he said, hey, hang on a minute. We'll get there. And I said, good enough. So you can trust Corey. But once you get your quote, it's up to you. You don't have to trust Corey at that moment. If you want to shop that quote around, man, go for it. Cool. It's your business. It's your prerogative. Certainly you're right. Go for it. You're going to end up coming back to Corey. And when you do, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast, and you'll get $500 off what was already the best deal you were going to get on that new Ford. 662-257-1900.
You already looking at shopping again?
I got a little Ford Jones situation.
You got a little urge on something?
A little.
Go make a move?
I don't know. Maybe at some point.
Thinking about a move?
At some point. Because I don't think I'm going to be spending on a Peloton.
You've changed your mind.
I can't get
this. You said it was good enough now.
Yeah, but now last night it wasn't. Last night was awful. My upload speed was like 2.1.
So did they just... Okay.
AT&T. AT&T sucks.
My mic is still going out occasionally. We have a problem. We have a mic issue.
We need to get some new mics.
I do really think we need some, because like as soon as I touched that thing, my volume just went completely down.
I said we buy the headsets, and tell people it's going to take us a little while to learn how to breathe into them, and it's going to have a couple.
Yeah, I told Neil yesterday. I was helping with a different podcast, and we currently are choosing stick mics and holders, but the headsets. You sound like a former Rivals writer that used to work in the company when you talk to him.
We're going to sound like Darth Vader at first.
Kind of does this a little bit. You've got to learn to breathe a certain way because they're so powerful. But
it'll take us a little time, and everybody will have to just relax.
Yeah, it'll be all right. Anyway, it used to be Mac South that we jumped on a while. So we could spread this around a little bit. So I'm going to make this quick for you. Apparently, you were able to call and get increased speeds with AT&T internet, which means they job everyone else just in general. And then you're telling me it only lasted about 24 hours.
I'm telling you it lasted 24 hours. I think they dialed me back down.
You think so?
And I'm paying for the highest deal. But and let me tell you this. The service guy that came out couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
But when you get... And I don't know where I'm talking to. Pakistan, India, beats the hell out of Sri Lanka. I don't know where the hell I'm talking to somebody.
Davenport, Iowa.
And I'm pretty sure it was not there. They tell me, we're going to send an extender out. Of course, when they come out, they said, we don't have extenders.
I don't understand.
Well, I'm just telling you what they said.
Okay.
We don't have extenders. And I said, okay, well, you're 3,900 feet from the box, and this is the best we can do. And I want to go, well, then... Put another box up. In this new neighborhood down behind us, they're going to be fiber. So they'll have it flying.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
But not here. Well, I told you a couple years ago when I tried to get U-verse, it was they could get it across the street, but not on my side of the street.
I have no patience for this.
If I was on the right side of the street, I was cool. But if on the left side of the street, no go.
I have no patience for it at all. Drives me insane.
Yeah, you're not one to handle insufficient explanation.
No,
very well.
No, not at all.
It just is what it is not really a good answer for you.
Well, no, because I'm asked why.
Because it is what it is.
Then fix it, make it better. But their answer is
because you were really excited when I came in 2 days ago because the lady had upped your internet speeds while on the phone with you.
Yes.
Boom.
Oh, it went from a download speed, I should say, of about 5 point whatever to 18. And so the guy says, well, we've got you opened up, but I don't know how long we can sustain that. What the hell does that mean? Why can't you sustain it? I don't understand.
Is it like they pull from somebody else's to give you more?
I don't. Come on, man. I mean, it's because they're robbing you.
It's a racket.
It is. It's absolutely a racket.
Well, it is. It's certainly that. But anyway, we'll drop our AT&T discussion for the day here on the show. We're gonna get to Ryan here in a bit. We'll talk a good bit with him today about the Super Bowl, about the Miami Dolphins, about aliens, flat Earth. Just listen, we'll figure it out. You'll get there with us. But
it's Friday for us too.
Yeah, that's our day. So first though, speaking of inane theories and whatnot, we come back to the Dennis Dodd story from yesterday. And look, it's like so many things we talk about. A can be true and B can be true all at the same time. You know, it's not a situation where it's one or the other in every conversation that you have, or they can't be inclusive to one another. And this is that because, look, I feel like I've said this 7,000 times, and I probably have said it about half as many podcasts as we've done in this room. Ole Miss gave limited information to prospects that weekend, to the best of our knowledge. Were there outright lies? I don't know. There were there was spin, there was ways to make things sound better with that first NOA. That weekend, everybody's talking about the 2016 weekend.
Yeah.
In saying that, that was just the first NOA. When we finally saw that thing in May, as we've told you, all you guys listening 7,000 times, there wasn't much there. It wasn't going to be some tremendous penalty. It wasn't going to be a multi-year bowl ban. It wasn't going to be lack of institutional control unless the NCAA already decided it was going to be lack of institutional control. It was going to be a media win probably for Ole Miss if that's all it was.
We've wondered why they didn't.
Yeah, we've said that. I mean, I told Michael Thompson that. I would have put the thing on the table and let everybody come in and go, hey, here's this thing. Look at it. Have fun.
Go for it.
So that is the only document that was available.
What was his response to that, by the way?
Kind of just whatever. You know, I mean, basically they thought that they should be able to respond themselves before anything was out.
Okay.
So that was the only thing available when any of this stuff happened. That's it. Now, is the program in a place that those kids signed up for? No. But that doesn't have relevance on what was known at the time that they are claiming. This is what Tom Mars has done the entire time. He is taking the totality of the entire NCAA situation and applying it to a previous time period when the majority of this stuff had not happened, had not been announced. No one knew the severity that was coming. So it's disingenuous at best, and it's something that was not mentioned whatsoever, at least in a direct way, by Dodd yesterday. He writes a couple times, well, they're referring to the NOA, but he never signals what actually was in said NOA. It was just left out there in presumption. So it can be a deal where Hugh Freeze is at fault and the media is getting everything completely wrong and making something 7,000, I keep using that word, times worse than it really was. Because when you have to look at this with any type of context, it was everything at once. It was not everything on the side or all separated. And I know the answer here. Number one, it's because it was Tom Mars going to the media yesterday and going, can you write this? Do me a favor. And they say, yes, sir, please, because they'd like the clicks and to be the guy that gets that out there. That's how that works. It's right before signing day. Mars knows that, and he's pissed at this point, so he's looking for direct impact.
Pissed at who?
He's grandstanding. I mean, it's pissed, but it's more just promoting himself. Pissed, probably not the right word. It's trumpeting is what it is.
For sure. Yeah.
So he knows it has the most impact right now.
Yes.
It has some symmetry to when all this stuff first popped, you know, week before signing day, all that crap.
The anniversary.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
And then Dodd, either because he wants to convey this message, because there's some laziness involved, because it's just easy. I don't know. I don't know that I've ever spoken to Dennis. I don't know him. Because of whatever reason, it's a story that leaves out much-needed paragraphs explaining why it's nowhere near what Mars is saying it is, while also being a key point in this timeline of an investigation. It's all of it.
Yes.
I don't know.
I'm to a place, I've told you, I really don't know that I have more words to say about
it. I mean, the implications from Dodd yesterday was, well, Hugh Freeze knew all about Leo Lewis and lied to the kids. It's like, that was a year later.
Yeah, it didn't come until, that was January of 16. It didn't come until
a year.
Yeah.
A year. Almost an exact calendar year later. I mean, now look, in saying all that, full disclosure, one of the screenshots yesterday had Freeze directing Trey Nixon to our publication. And that publication had what it had because of inaccuracies told to us by Hugh Freeze. So,
yes.
You know, we've talked about that. That's not new here on the show.
It's part of the, you know, Freeze is frustrated, I'm sure, about this. And yet, what I was told that Friday afternoon in January when that came out was inaccurate.
It was spun to the level of being inaccurate.
Which makes it inaccurate.
Yeah.
I mean, made me look like crap.
Well, yeah, still getting thrown at you today.
Yeah, made me look like the one thing in my professional career, whether I've done it well or not, is for someone else to determine. But my goal, one of my goals, has to always never. I never wanted to be labeled an Auburn homer when I covered Auburn. I didn't want to be labeled an Auburn hater when I covered Auburn. And I've covered Ole Miss for 10 years. I don't want to be labeled an Ole Miss homer, and I don't want to be labeled an Ole Miss hater.
Which, frankly, is impossible because of just people's
fandom does not allow people to understand that. Now, we've all learned that. Fandom does not allow. I've had this conversation with so many journalists.
Well, and you also have a lot of people, I mean, and I can name three or four off the top of my head, who try to avoid the looking favorable to the point of going so negative.
Yes.
To try to offset it, which is equally disturbing in a lot of ways.
That's why I don't want to be labeled a hater. I don't want to be labeled a homer or a hater. But that article makes me look like a shill for the football program. It's a terrible look. It's one that in a job interview, if someone did research on me, I'd have to explain. I resent it. Pisses me off to think about it to this day. Because there are other people you could have gone to for propaganda.
And that's kind of the point. Nobody's completely innocent or 100% guilty in this.
Right.
Hugh Freeze had no knowledge of what all was going to come out a year later.
No.
None.
No.
His words to Nixon and some of those guys, while spun, there's no way to put the blame on him for what was to come 12, 14 months after that. That's impossible.
Absolutely not.
So, but...
And there was even no whiff at that moment. There was no whiff, except maybe with Steve Robertson, that there was a second NOA coming. That there was another investigation that was going to be launched. There was certainly no whiff at that moment of what was to come on draft night.
Still months away from Lindsey Miller and Laramie Tunzel getting into it in their front yard. Right?
Well, I'm trying to think.
Or was that the summer before?
No, that had been the summer before. Right? I can't.
Maybe it was.
I can't keep up.
Yeah. I guess you're right. Yeah, no, you're right.
That had happened before.
Yeah, you're right.
Because
he
ended up missing the first seven games of 16.
Yeah, right. You're right. It was the Leo stuff that hadn't popped yet. Or was just starting to simmer. Because I forget, this is all running together in my head when the first interview was.
Yeah.
Because this is several months before Ross gave the quote to the Clarion Ledger about it's all over.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because that was March or April or somewhere in there of that.
Because Laramie and those guys were drafted in April of 16, right?
Right, yeah. You are correct.
As many times as I've used hashtag Tunsil Question Gate, you think I'd remember when it was.
You would think you'd have a date figured out at some point. But
I think at some point I've decided that in my own mind I'm over it and I'm past it and I've moved on to the point that I have buried it.
But it's the same crap over and over and over again. I mean, look. These players are using this as leverage for their chances for immediate eligibility.
But that's not in Ole Miss's hands.
No. Well, none of it. No, that thing read yesterday. I went, yeah, it's not really Ole Miss's problem at this point, frankly.
I mean, frankly.
Other than some PR or whatever, it's
not Ole
Miss's problem.
If you're Ole Miss, I think you just tell the kids, look, if they ask us if we think you should be granted eligibility, our answer is yes. Yeah, we do.
No, I don't think they're going to do that. But
you don't think they'll ask Ole Miss?
No, I don't think Ole Miss would say yes. I think Ole Miss would see that as an admission of guilt that they don't think they're guilty of in February of 16.
Yeah, the case is over.
Well, the appeal's not.
They're not winning that appeal.
I'm just saying, though, you're giving a public ammunition there, even though...
I guess so.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, because if Ole Miss goes, well, I didn't mislead them, in my opinion. Why should I grant them the ability to circumvent the rules leaving the program?
But back to the original point, they're not part of this process. Unless they are behind the scenes fighting these waivers.
And I don't necessarily think they're fighting them, but I don't know that they would give full agreement with them either, if there's a middle ground there.
Yeah. The middle ground would just be, so we don't care.
Well, I mean, maybe that's the answer.
I mean, just say, frankly, we don't give a damn.
If I'm Ole Miss, I don't think I go way out of my way to fight for them by any means. What difference does it make?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, why would I spend resources or man hours to help them at this point?
Well, I wouldn't spend any man hours. My simple statement was, with the NCAA came and said, "What do you think?" I'd be like, I don't know, whatever. Let them play.
I mean, none of them are directly impacting Ole Miss's seasons at any point. At their other schools.
Well, yeah, no. They don't play Florida.
No.
They're not playing in a bowl game, so they're not going to play Michigan. I don't even know who else is anywhere. Georgia Tech. They don't play Georgia Tech. They're not in a bowl game. They're not playing Houston. Not in a bowl game. Although, from everything I can gather, none of the aforementioned kids, including Shea Patterson, are going to single-handedly impact a game. Like, I saw a draft thing. I'm not picking on Shea here. There was some draft thing, like walterfootball.com or something, that had Shea Patterson number one in next year's draft. I just thought, what? How?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to tell you, if he's number one in next year's draft, that dude answers a ton of questions in 13 games at Michigan.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, we'll get to Ryan in a second and have a little fun on this Friday. For those of you who have been with us this long, you'll probably enjoy it too. If there's any football Knicks listening for the first time, I'd probably turn it off about now, but just giving you a little heads up there as we
I thought our breakdown of the Eagles' offense versus the Patriots' defense was magnificent.
Nick Foles against cover two.
The way that he is consistently looking off the receiver to the left, going back to the slot receiver in the right on the drag route. I thought the way that we broke that down was fantastic. Good stuff.
Ron Jaworski coming in with Neil McCready here in a second. Podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting, understands your market. Also a leader in condo financing, and you get the float down option, where if the rates go down after you lock it in, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLO, JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with a personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person. There's no 10 buttons to push. There's no 5-minute wait. What there is Kasasa. It's the absolute best cash checking account you'll find anywhere. With Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Ole Miss in Tennessee, Saturday at 5 p.m. in Knoxville. That game can be seen on the SEC Network. If you're in and around Oxford or you're heading this way, you're thinking about a condo, you're thinking about moving, relocating to Oxford, you need to go get in touch with Harry Alexander. He's an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for, and then send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com.
Now, Ryan Brown on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. So, Ryan, Super Bowl Sunday in a couple days. Are you a big Super Bowl party guy? Are you big into the wings and the dips and the socializing around the game and the commercials?
You know, I'm really not. I actually, my favorite day is Championship Sunday. You get two. This year we did not get two good games. We got a blowout and a good game. But you normally get two really good games. And I think that's a better day than Super Bowl Sunday, because Super Bowl Sunday, it could be a blowout. And Super Bowl Sunday, to me, the parties draw in, the fans that just the people that like to sit around and talk, the guy that brings his wife because the other wives are coming, they don't care anything about the game. They sit around and talk, or all they're concerned about is seeing Timberlake, you know, at halftime. So to me, that's a little annoying. Not that I have to hear everything Al Michaels says, but I like to feel like I understand what's going on in the game. I want to hear what the announcers are saying. So I far prefer the Super Bowl low-key at my own house. My wife will probably come down to see Justin Timberlake. She loves him. My kids may or may not participate. I don't know, but I'm fine with that. I low-key Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know, it's a deal where, like, this Sunday, I don't really care either team, whatever. So just find a party, hang out with some friends, whatever. I don't mind that much. But I've told Neil this 1,000 times. When the Saints played in it in 2010, I guess, 2009 season, I had, like, strict rules. Like, I watched it at home. I only allowed certain people. Like, it was an incredibly detailed list of do not screw this up for me and leave me alone. I could not have anybody that would take away from me trying to not pass out from nerves and just watch the game. It was, in some ways, the most miserable day of my life.
You know, in the event, it's funny you say that, because in the event the Dolphins ever make the Super Bowl, which, you know, look, we may have a better shot of getting killed by an asteroid. But in the event the Dolphins ever make the Super Bowl, it will be me by myself. There will be no – I mean, my wife will be welcome, but she knows just how – she knows how regular season Dolphins games go, so she'll know when it is a good time to be in or out of the room. So my wife, I mean, she's got a very good gauge for that. She kind of keeps the kids herded. So my wife will understand that, but that will be the only people allowed. There will not be a party at my house if the Dolphins are in. And it's funny when you said that, I was just thinking, what would my reaction be? I will probably be somewhat miserable, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Just the fact, I don't know, man, just the fact that the Dolphins are in the game, I'd be such a bundle of nerves. I don't know that I could even enjoy Super Bowl Sunday. Like, on one hand, you want to be excited because your team's there, but on the other hand, I don't know that I could enjoy the game.
Well, Neil's heard this. Our listeners have heard this 1,000 times. I expended so much emotional capital on the NFC title game when they beat the Vikings and the way that all went that I spent that whole 2 weeks going, well, I'm just kind of happy to be here. This is fun. Let's enjoy it. I'm not going to get crazy because this is cool no matter what happens. And that lasted until they got the onside kick to start the second half. And then I went, you know, we're here. Let's go ahead and win this thing now. And then it was completely miserable until Tracy Porter picked that pass.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, the Nationals are my second favorite team. And against Neil's Cubs, or against the Dodgers, or against any of these teams they've played, I've told myself, I'm not going to get emotionally spent at this. I'm not going to get emotionally spent. And then against Neil's Cubs, Strasburg goes up there to Wrigley Field and pitches the game of his life, and all of a sudden I'm emotionally all in. And I just make myself miserable. And then I watch us just throw that game away. I thought we were past this, Neil. I'm sorry. I watched us throw this game away, and I just, you know, it gets so frustrating. And I don't know why I let a sports team do that to me, but it does. And the Dolphins would be the same way. I mean, if the Dolphins made the Super Bowl and started kicking the ball around the way the Nationals did in that game five, I would be just miserable, just absolutely miserable. And that is so silly that I let myself do that, but I know that I would be.
If it makes you feel any better, I was at the Cubs convention not long ago, and they were talking to Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer about the season, and some little kid came up and said, what happened to the pitching against the Dodgers? And they all laughed because it was a kid that asked the question. But then they answered it honestly. They said that they thought this applied to the Nationals too, that series was so draining on both teams that neither team would have had a shot in hell against the Dodgers the way the Dodgers were set up. So if it makes you feel any better, smart baseball people believe that the Cubs and the Nationals beat each other that series.
No offense, that did not make me feel better at all. But I appreciate you sharing that anecdote, and I hope you enjoyed the Cubs convention.
I will say this about you guys mentioned the series, like the World Series when the Cubs were in it against the Indians. When they were down, I was so excited the Cubs won the pennant that I almost got kicked out of Tiger Stadium that night. I got yelled at. Luckily, I wasn't alone. There was about five of us that were around the television during the second quarter of the LSU-Ole Miss game, and we're jumping up and down at the Cubs turning a double play in the seventh or eighth inning to get out of trouble. And I was so excited about the Cubs winning the pennant that the World Series at the beginning was just, man, this is awesome. We're in the World Series. And then I got to go to a game, and so I got to experience all of that. And so by the time the Cubs were down 3-1, I'd sort of accepted that they weren't going to win. And I was okay. And then they won game 5, and I still didn't really get my hopes up. But once they got ahead in game 6, from that point forward, I was horrible. And like the day of game 7, it was just, leave me alone. I'm going to go to my office. If you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone, and I'm going to be loud. It's going to be bad. You know it's going to be bad. So you decide how you want to handle that. And it was bad. But it was good. But it was bad.
I'm not even sure it's bad and a good. Yeah. I'm not even sure I could imagine going to a Super Bowl that the Dolphins were in, because I went to a meaningless Dolphins-Falcons regular season game this year. And the Dolphins get down 17-0 in the first half, and I'm just miserable. It's awful. The Atlanta fans are going crazy, and they're good fans. I mean, they weren't, like, harassing me or anything. But, yeah, I'm just miserable. And then the Dolphins start a comeback, and they actually get back in the game. And then for the last half of the fourth quarter, I'm a bundle of nerves. And that's a meaningless a Dolphins season that's going nowhere against a Falcons team that's not even a rival. And a meaningless October game. I cannot imagine how I would be in a Super Bowl. I don't know that I want to spend that kind of money and go through that much effort to get to a Super Bowl and feel that way during a game. I think even if the Dolphins made the Super Bowl, I would probably just still watch it at home. I don't even know that I'd try to go. And that's, I know most people think that sounds stupid, but I don't know that I want to be there for that.
No, I agree with you. I would have no desire whatsoever to go to Super Bowl the team's in. Not even a little bit. You're not really even in sections for the most part. It's just corporate and people. You know what I mean? I mean, it's not even like a home stadium or even a visitor stadium where you're sort of any kind of bundle. I mean, it's just people, just a big conglomeration of dudes at a game for the most part. Not really paying attention, waiting on halftime.
They don't have the same
shows.
Emotional investment.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they don't have the same emotional investment that I do. Yeah, that is frustrating. I mean, you know, like, that's the great thing about college football. It's not a corporate game at all on the campuses, and you go, and everybody sitting around you at an SEC stadium has a similar emotional investment to you. Almost everybody. I shouldn't say everyone, but almost everybody. So you don't feel like a fool if you're celebrating, because everybody around you is celebrating. So that, yeah, the Super Bowl is less that, and I don't know. I was at the national championship game, obviously, and President Trump was there, and I went in early. I was in like 4 hours early, went through Secret Service. That was a weird mistake. I went through Secret Service and all that 4 hours before, but I heard horror stories about people getting into that stadium, and that just is miserable to me. I have zero interest in dealing with that, and that's what I think a Super Bowl would be like, even if the president's not there.
What'd you do for 4 hours?
Well, I went in and went up to the press box and ate a meal and just kind of hung out. They had warned us that the Secret Service check is going to be much more intense than a normal security check, so get there early. And we had done our show up in Buckhead, which, you know, for those that don't know that have never been to Atlanta, probably without traffic, a 20-minute drive to the stadium. With Atlanta traffic, anything from 30 minutes to 10 hours. So, you know, we were worried about traffic around the stadium. We had been warned that, you know, it could be difficult getting in because of Secret Service. So we just decided as soon as the show's over, let's don't screw around. Let's just go on to the stadium. And I had to sit around and kill time and talk to people in the press box. But better safe than sorry on that one.
And
the Secret Service wasn't as bad as they had warned us.
That's what I was going to ask you. What additional measures are taken during that type of entrance?
Well, you guys know this. I don't know about the normal fans. I just heard fans what happened with the fans is they had to shut down one entire outside of the stadium when the around the president's arrival. So they limited gate access to, I think, three gates. So you had the additional security measures for fans, and you had one fewer gate to operate with. So, and then on top of all of that, college football fans are used to this. You had entirely electronic entrance. In other words, all your tickets were on the phone, which if you go to an NFL game now, I think almost all the NFL games are that way, but most college games, you still can have a printed ticket. But everything was on the phone. So, and then if you're not used to that, you don't realize you need to save it on your phone, because when you get to the stadium and you try to pull it up in your email, you're not going to have a good signal and you're not going to be able to pull it up. So I think it was a total disaster for us. I mean, you guys know when you go into a stadium, normally, you know, some security employee opens your bag and kind of looks through it halfway, and then they put a little tag on it and you walk in. With this, my understanding is the Secret Service had already done background checks on all the credentialed media because they had our information. So apparently I got a clean record, which is good. But you gave them your bag. You gave Secret Service. I just carry a smaller backpack. It's got like an iPad, chargers, you know, a microphone and a recording device. I mean, that's about all that's in it. Maybe a clip bar for halftime or something like that. So I left my bag with the Secret Service, and then they brought it back to me. You completely left it with them, and you left that area. They searched it, and then they were very nice. They brought it back, thank you, Mr. Brown, here's your bag. And that was it. So I think I had a background check and a more thorough bag inspection, but no cavity search or anything like that, so that's a plus.
Yeah, big difference from, you know, this. When media walks in and they're checking your bag, they won't actually touch your bag. So you've got to do the unzipping and the pulling apart.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's such a just a
– yep. Yeah, a lot of times they just have like a wooden dowel, and they'll stick the, you know, the little wooden stick in there and look around. This is a totally different situation. I think Secret Service is playing for keeps.
Yeah, a little different than the Cobra security people. Who you open your bag, your bag, and they don't even look in it. It's it almost like in football season. Because I'll admit, I'm the guy that thinks every week. Chase will vouch for this.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
Every week I think, you know, all of these stadiums would be such targets. I mean, if you really wanted to inflict agony and hell, these stadiums are targets. And I'll walk into a stadium and they don't even look at my bag, and I'm almost like, damn, look at my bag, because I want you to look at the next guy's bag and that guy's bag. Look at my damn bag.
Yeah. No, it's very lax. I would agree with that. I just always operate under what might be a false sense of security, but the sense of security that we have a really good intelligence committee, community, I should say, and if they thought there was a legitimate reason to be concerned for an attack, that security would be tighter. Because I look at that and I'm like, there is zero chance with all the intelligence we have, they let President Trump come to a college football game in a stadium with that many people. If there were anything close to a legitimate threat, his life could be in danger. They would never do that. I mean, they're not. I don't think they're just going to solely depend on a bag search at the gate. They know their intelligence tells them this is a safe place to be. Because, there are a lot of, like, Jim Dunaway, who I was on my show with, is kind of like you, Neil. He worries about everything. I mean, he's worse than you. He worries about everything. So he never goes to a game where he doesn't think this will be my final game of my life because the stadium's going to implode, you know. And he kept saying, man, I'm nervous for the president being there. I was like, you're crazy, man. We're in the safest place on the planet. If they let the president of the United States come to a game and walk out on the field, they are 100% certain that's a secure environment. There is zero possibility of something happening there. So
you didn't see
that's probably the safest I've ever felt at a game.
You didn't see the Super Bowl that they played in Baltimore at that Dome Stadium in Baltimore where they set the bomb off?
Was that a documentary? I thought that was a film.
Oh, was that not real? Oh, I saw that at the movie theater. I just assumed it was real life. I'm sorry. I'm kidding.
Well, was that Sum of All Fears? Is that movie, Sum of All Fears?
Yeah, it was a Tom Clancy movie. I love Clancy. I love all that stuff, the Jack Ryan stuff. Jack Ryan's
too,
like a world-class badass. But, well, no, you're right. I mean, if
have you seen
go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask if you've seen that one of the biggest commercial. I don't know how much they've spent, but, you know, Amazon Prime is releasing a Jack Ryan series. And the guy's name escapes my mind, Krasinski, that played on The Office. What's his first name?
Oh, he was...
John Krasinski.
Yeah, John.
He was Jim. Jim Halpert. Yeah. He's playing Jack Ryan, which some people have said that's miscast, but apparently he was in some movie where he played a character like that. It was really good, I'm told. But anyway, so Amazon Prime is releasing a Jack Ryan series that they're going to advertise it heavily on the Super Bowl, I understand. So there's that.
I don't know what you're doing on your Saturday, Ryan. Do you like this guy's chances? Mike Hughes, a limo driver and self-taught rocket scientist. He's going to launch himself into the stratosphere in a rocket he built in his garage. His ultimate goal is to get to outer space and prove that the Earth is flat. And this is his third attempt. So Mike Hughes having a big Saturday tomorrow.
The whole flat Earth thing blows me away. We got into that on the show one day. And I was surprised at how many flat earthers are in our audience. And
wait, what?
Humor of the people that know flat earthers. Yeah, oh, no. There's a movement out there, man. There is a movement. Now, we've got a humble brag here. We've got a pretty big radio audience.
I know you do.
That's not even a humble brag. That's a straight brag. All right, so we've got a pretty big radio audience. So it's a diverse audience. As diverse as you're going to get, you know, in Birmingham, Alabama, South, obviously. But we've got some flat earthers in our audience, and like they started sending us this propaganda, and you know they're talking about how you notice you never see a photo of round Earth except from NASA, and I'm like, well, yeah, they're the only ones that have built the space, and they're like it's some government conspiracy. And what I can't figure out, what I ask them is, you know, what do you think? Like I made the mistake of opening dialogue with them, which was a huge mistake on my part. But I'm like, why? The government may try to convince us of a lot of things. I will not deny that the government might try to convince you something that is untrue is actually true.
Sure.
For the benefit of the government. I would never, you know, suggest otherwise.
Right.
But what is the end game for them convincing us their Earth is round rather than flat? I mean, what is the end game for the government to get us to believe that one? Like, I can't figure that one out. Why the government would be so passionate, like, we've got to convince these people the Earth is round. I mean, it's not going to change my life. If you told me the Earth was flat, if like NASA said, hey, by the way, we've been screwing with you guys for 100 years, Earth really is flat. You know what? My life's pretty much the same. I don't think I'm going to change at all if I find out the Earth is flat.
Take a break in our talk with Ryan and tell you the podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773 for a free quote, or you can go to mastercutslawn.com and see that as well. You sign an annual contract. Mention the podcast. First cut will be free. They'll take care of your landscape and they'll build an outdoor kitchen, outdoor living area, and when the temperatures heat up, they also do skeeter beaters to get rid of those pesky mosquitoes around your property. I've been using them for a while, and you should too. Again, free quote, 662-607-7773.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, it is the place to go. It's Grenada Nissan. It's located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. Check out their website. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And when you visit the dealership, tell Gene and Sandy you heard about it here on the podcast or at RebelGrove.com, and you'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. Podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at MSBNKR.com. or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800. Now back to Ryan Brown on the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
So these people believe that like Amelia Earhart or somebody just fell off the side at some point. There's an end somewhere.
That's the thing that blows me.
There's like a sign at the end of the road.
Like an infinity pool. You just go off.
Yeah.
One minute you're in the ocean and the next minute you're not.
I was like, okay. Yeah. I was like, okay, so the only photos that we have of a sphere of Earth as a sphere are from the government. Okay, I agree with that. Again, they're the only ones I've ever been to space to get that picture. Why has nobody given me a picture of the edge of the Earth? If it really is flat, if you want to prove it to me, go to the edge and make a picture.
Yeah, walk to the edge.
And I'll believe you. Yeah, I mean, somebody's got to be able to get to the edge, right? So get to the edge, make a picture, and I'll say, okay, well, you got a point. It is flat. You're right. You
know, son of a bitch.
And apparently, if I step over the edge, I fall into eternity. I don't know what happened.
Well, there would
but
be
show me a picture of an edge, and I might believe you.
Well, there would be four edges. Because it would have to be a big rectangle.
Well, there'd be a lot of edge.
My point being, yeah, it's not just one.
There would be four corners.
Yeah,
you would have corners.
Right.
And then the other thing is all these pilots who fly airplanes would have to tell you about how, once you get close enough to the edge, you have to start your U-turn. You've got to turn around because if you fly over the edge, you would be flying into space. There would be an atmospheric shift.
Well, they're in on it.
All the pilots.
Yeah. All the pilots.
Yeah, I know. The pilots. Yeah, all those pilots. They're part of the. They're part of the conspiracy to make you believe that the Earth is round. I don't. I mean, look, man.
I just don't.
People can believe what they want.
So what?
It's a big world with a lot of diverse beliefs, but that one I've never understood.
What is your guess then on your audience believing in like legitimate alien activity that has come to Earth? Think it's high?
I would. I'd put that at probably 5 to 10% on the legitimate alien activity.
That might be high, though, Ron.
Yeah, I'd go 5 to 10%. It may be. I would say flat earthers are less than 1%.
Well,
they
of course.
Are out there.
Yeah.
Our listening audience.
You think aliens have come to Earth, Chase? Outer space intelligent life has come to Earth. Do you? What's your gut feeling?
My gut is no.
Ryan.
I would say no to that. I don't believe that.
It is interesting. We do have to think about it for a second, though.
Well, here's what blows me away. Like when we portray the aliens in movies, they are always more technically advanced than us. Why do we believe that? Like, what if there are aliens, but they're Neanderthals? They're still cavemen. They're living in a cave. They don't have cable or central heating and air. You know, they haven't discovered the internet. I mean, why are they always technologically advanced? Why are they more technologically advanced than us?
Well, it's because they come to us. We're not going to them, right? Because they essentially they're the life that's finding us. We're the Neanderthals
well,
to them.
I know that, but why do? It's a little bit insulting. It's actually a great deal insulting that all these movies that portray alien life portray us as the hayseeds. We're the hayseeds of the universe. Well, let's go to Earth. They'll be easy to overtake because they're not technologically advanced. Why do we just work on that assumption? I mean, maybe there are aliens out there, but they're just now discovering flight. You know, their Wright brothers are just now getting up in the air somewhere. So thousands of years from now, they'll be to where we are right now. I mean, that's why I don't. Why do we always just assume that if there is alien life, it's more technologically advanced than us? Maybe they're behind us. Maybe we are the gold standard of the universe. Maybe we're the most technologically advanced planet of the universe, and they're all scared of us. They're like, my God, if these humans on Earth ever figure out we're here, we are screwed, man, because they are so technologically advanced, they will take us over and make us their people. Maybe we live in that situation and we don't even know it.
You know, with Trump and Kim Jong-un and all that, you might not want to float this idea because we might team up and go get them.
Well, I mean, they're talking about living on Mars. I mean, you got to live in a bubble, but you're going to live on Mars. That's another one I don't understand. Earth is great. I mean, why do I want to live on Mars?
You know,
I want to go to Mars and live in a bubble.
So I went to NASA with my daughter. One of our subscribers at the time was like a big shot at NASA, and we got to tour like the vehicle, for lack of a better term, the ship, the rocket, the whole deal that they're the prototype to get to Mars. That looked miserable, man. I mean, you'd be on that thing for a year there, and then you get there, and there's nothing there. I mean, the Cubs don't play one game on Mars next season. I mean, it's
nope.
And then you got to come back, and getting you back is problematic because they're like, well, we hadn't really figured that out yet. Well, let's figure that out. But I don't want to travel on a ship for a year. That would suck.
Yeah, I know. I have zero interest in that. I mean, there are so many places on Earth I haven't even seen yet that I want to see, and I Mars is not on the list of things I really want to see. I don't really care. Now, there are a lot of people that I hope take them up on their offer and head on up there for a while, but I'm not going to be one of them.
So the Super Bowl Sunday, do you have any thoughts on who's – is this the Patriots win it? Do you even care? That's the better question. Do you care at all?
No. As long as my team's not in it, I don't really care. And I should pull against the Patriots as a Dolphins fan. But I'm to the point in this situation, like, how's it going to affect my life if the Patriots get another Super Bowl? You know, I mean, they've got a million of them, and Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever to play the game. Bill Belichick's the greatest coach ever to coach the game. One more Super Bowl isn't going to make that any different. I mean, they're the greatest franchise, the greatest dynasty we've seen. But they add another Super Bowl, it's not changing anything. So, you know, at a certain point, I don't really care if they win or not, even as a Dolphins fan. I'm in a weird situation where I wanted the Patriots to beat the Jags because it makes for a better Super Bowl to me to have the Patriots in it. But I would like to see the Eagles win. I mean, that's a passionate fan base. We can argue about how good they are because obviously you've seen the videos of the Minnesota fans and the way they were treated. So they've got some bums in their fan base. But it is certainly a passionate fan base, and I have to respect their passion and how long-suffering they have been. So in a sense, I'd kind of like to see the Eagles win it. But my Sunday is going to be fine either way. I'm to the point now I just want a really good, entertaining game.
I spend a lot of time on the show over the course of football season talking about rivals in the NFC South and my hatred of the Falcons. What's kind of your pyramid of hate for the AFC East? You say you're not overly crazy about the Patriots, but what's the hated team over there for you?
Well, when I was a kid, you know, the Bills are the ones that hurt the Dolphins the most because that was in the Jim Kelly, you know, K-Gun offense, Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly, Andre Reed. And one of the most painful losses I've ever had as a Dolphins fan, we had the AFC Championship game, 92. Winner eventually was going to get the Cowboys. They beat the San Francisco 49ers that day in the NFC Championship. 92 season, 93 AFC Championship game. It was in Miami. We had split the season series with Buffalo. It was like a beautiful 75-degree day. Buffalo had played the last 2 months in the snow. I just thought it set up perfect for Miami. And Marino threw two picks. I think we fumbled three times. It was 26-3 at one point, Buffalo. And that was just a painful loss because I thought the Dolphins, I thought they had it set up. They had the AFC Championship game. At the time, it was Joe Robbie. It's been a million things since. But the stadium they're in now. And I just thought it was going to be perfect. And the Bills beat us, and they go to the Super Bowl. When I was a really little kid, the Patriots, you know, 85 was when the Bears were undefeated and the Dolphins beat them on Monday Night Football. A lot of people remember that game. What they forget is the Patriots beat the Dolphins in the AFC Championship game. There was going to be a Bears-Dolphins Super Bowl rematch, which probably would not have gone the Dolphins' way the way the Bears were at the end of that year. But the more painful one was the Bills loss to me. So I grew up probably hating the Bills. The Patriots are really, really easy to hate. It's weird. I hate and respect them at the same time because you can't help but respect what they've done. So the pyramid of hate would probably be Patriots, Bills, Jets in that order. None of them are particularly likable, but it would probably go in that order for me.
That's fair. The Jets are just kind of there, kind of like the Bucks are just sort of there for me.
Yeah, exist. Jets, their fans are really annoying. I don't like their fan base. But by and large, the Dolphins have done okay against the Jets, and they've really done okay against the Patriots in Miami. We never beat them in New England. But they beat the Patriots pretty regularly in Miami. The Bills are the ones that are kind of weird. It's a weird series against the Bills. So that would probably be the order right now, Patriots, Bills, Jets. But as a kid, the Bills would have been on top. When I was a teenager and the Bills were going to four straight Super Bowls, a lot of the time they were going through Miami to get to those Super Bowls. So that developed a pretty big hatred for me.
What are you guys talking about today?
We'll probably talk a lot of Super Bowl. I guess we'll talk some SEC basketball. Alabama's a really schizophrenic team, so it's pumped as the fans were about Alabama beating Oklahoma on Monday, they were equally upset, and some even starting to turn on Avery Johnson after their loss at home to Missouri. Auburn basketball fans are through the roof right now. But Auburn fans will tell you this, no shot at Auburn fans. A lot of Auburn fans are through the roof excited right now, but fully anticipating that all of this is going to fall apart and Bruce Pearl is going to be fired, because there are a lot of Auburn fans that just think they can't have anything nice. so those two things plus the Super Bowl will probably dominate our conversation.
You know, I watched, because Auburn was here on Tuesday night. That team plays with so much confidence. They take the court believing they're going to win. And I saw Alabama take the court a week earlier with Sexton, and they did not have that same swagger, if you will. I mean, you could tell they were, hey, we're on the road, and sometimes this doesn't work out. And that Auburn team, there was none of that. But you're right. This college basketball thing, it's February. It's going to be March soon, obviously, because that's how it works on the calendar. You just get a feeling.
Yeah, I've seen the calendar, yeah.
You get a feeling that the FBI is going to drop something right around tournament time. I don't know why. I just kind of do. Maybe because that's if you were writing the story, well, that's how you'd write it.
Yeah, well. And, you know, I mean, it's not the fears are not unwarranted for Auburn fans. You had Auburn's president at the announcement of the new athletics director, Alan Green, the Auburn president was being interviewed. I believe it was by AL.com and Brandon Marcello of Auburn Undercover. And he said, hey, look, this season is great. We appreciate the job Bruce Pearl does. But he needs to know there is an expectation that he is going to have to talk to me about all of this that is going on. So when you have a school president, Stephen Leith, being that open about it, there is reason for concern that this could be shaky ground. I mean, the school president essentially was calling out his basketball head coach in the media, saying he's got to understand he's going to have to come talk to me at some point about this. So there's obviously an underlying issue going on, and the NCAA isn't even really involved in this deal quite yet. I mean, it's still an FBI issue. So once the NCAA gets involved, it's going to be a different game for the schools. Maybe not a worse game, but a different game. So that is that is really, really interesting what happens there. And one more note, something we talked about on the show the other day that you guys might be surprised we got into was the fact that Ole Miss did their Mount Rushmore figurines, and that Marshall Henderson was part of it. Was that, I mean, not that you guys, that the fans dislike Marshall Henderson, but he is among the four best Ole Miss basketball players of all time. Is that accurate?
He is certainly,
he's one of the most popular basketball players of all time.
Yeah.
That would be the way to put it.
I mean, I don't know enough about Ole Miss history to get into who played in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. Judging by their win-loss records, not too many good players did. I mean, if you do even quasi-modern history, yeah, he's one of their four best players.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody knew Gerald Glass. I mean, you can't do it if you don't have Gerald Glass, right?
Glass would be on it. I think Murphy Holloway would be on it. And then I think you'd have to say Marshall Henderson and Stephen Moody.
Think about it is, I'd rather have Chris Warren than Marshall Henderson. And if you're going all time, Johnny Newman's on it because, I mean, he just is.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, again, I don't know enough about Ansu Cisse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Ansu Cisse.
Yeah, but most popular, Marshall's it. I mean, he was volatile, he was dynamic, and he's on a team that won the conference tournament, which Ole Miss hadn't done a lot either. I mean, you're talking about a program that had Ole Miss had four all-time NCAA tournament wins prior to Andy Kennedy. Four.
Are you serious?
They beat Villanova. They did the Sweet 16 year, and maybe one more that I'm forgetting off the top of my head.
They went to the second round once by beating Villanova. They went to the Sweet 16 once by beating somebody in Notre Dame.
I thought there was one more, but maybe I'm forgetting. Maybe that's just it.
I think that's it. They had won three NCAA tournament games.
Yeah.
Man, that is really difficult to believe. And, wow, that's really difficult to believe. You know, we do have listening that got us in that kind of discussion about that. And Andy Kennedy is always, anytime he comes up, man, the Ole Miss fans in our audience, it's always interesting about Andy because the thing they almost all say about him is, I'll have to give him credit. We are about as consistent a program as we can be under him, but it's a really frustrating consistency. That it's about the same thing every year. But I think Ole Miss fans feel like kind of what you guys are talking about. It's not like we've got a great history. And if we unloaded Andy Kennedy, there is no guarantee what we would get. So we'll just kind of keep this frustrating consistency. And I don't know if that's representative of all Ole Miss basketball fans, but the ones in our listing area, that's kind of the way they seem to feel.
Yeah, Ryan, quickly, I mean, because it didn't take long, Ole Miss's NCAA tournament results. In 81, they won the conference tournament, lost to Kansas in the first round. 97, lost to Temple first round. 98, lost to Valpo in that game, everybody knows, in the first round. 99, beat Villanova, lost to Michigan State. 2001, made the Sweet 16, beating Iona and Notre Dame. Lost to UCLA in 02, and then beat Wisconsin, lost to LaSalle under Kennedy in 13, and then beat BYU, lost to Xavier in 15. That's it.
Wow, that is remarkable.
Yeah, so three.
And it's true, though, when you say, give me the history of Ole Miss basketball, almost everybody's going to say, well, they lost to that Valpo play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's almost like the first thing that comes to mind when you say, okay, summarize the history of Ole Miss basketball. Well, they were the team that the Drew kid hit the shot for Valpo, that amazing buzzer beater. So they were that team. That's almost like, I mean, no offense to Ole Miss basketball, but that's almost the thing that jumps out the most at you in the history of Ole Miss basketball.
It's true.
Yeah.
So that's why Marshall Henderson.
And I love how
Marshall was a highlight reel, so people, you know, he was must see television, and let's face it, in a sport that very rarely is must see television.
We also debated, like, we saw that his image was him with his tongue out. We debated, should it have been him popping a jersey? We were debating what the actual Marshall Henderson, if you wanted to really capture him, what his image should be. I mean, that was a pretty good one, him with his tongue out. That was, you know, most guys are just smiling in their bust or trying to look menacing, and Marshall with his tongue out, I thought was pretty good.
Well, man, we really appreciate the time. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl for what it's worth, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, boys, you guys be good.
Later on. Thanks to Ryan for joining us. It was kind of fun today with him. You hear him every Friday on the podcast, a podcast brought to you also by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the place to go online for the pharmacy there in Holly Springs, 662-232-2321. Sorry, 252-2321. 662-252-2321. Now, same people also operating G&M Pharmacy in Oxford on South Lamar. They do local delivery and great service that you've come to love. So, again, Tyson Drugs in Holly Springs, G&M in Oxford, and TysonDrugs.com on the internet.
Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need, so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben, 443-935-5013, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance, but did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Well, recently State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, Romero challenges you to give him a shot at that property. If you do, you won't be sorry. Check out the Romero Miller State Farm reviews on Google. And then if you have insurance needs in Tennessee or Mississippi, you owe it to yourself to give Romero Miller State Farm a call. 662-893-1212.
the Mike Hughes guy we were talking about, I mean, I'm kind of impressed he was a self-taught rocket scientist that built a rocket. I couldn't build a rocket.
I wouldn't know where to start in the building of a rocket. I mean, I truly wouldn't even know where to begin.
No.
Science was never my thing. Like, when I was a little kid, sixth grade, I got put in the, I guess because I tested well, I got put in the gifted and talented class at I.A. Lewis Elementary.
Small school?
Yeah, it was small.
Okay.
It's where my crush on Wendy Nix started.
Wendy Nix. That's a new one.
Yeah. Had a crush on Wendy Nix from the sixth grade all the way till like we were freshmen in college.
And you ask her out when?
Never.
She popular? Or just kind of?
Yeah, she was pretty popular.
Okay. Why didn't you ask her out?
I just didn't.
Well, I've had this question about numerous girls with Neil McCready over the course of the last.
Regardless.
Where's Wendy Nix now?
I don't know. I have no idea.
How'd you lose touch of her in college? Where'd she go?
Alabama.
She went to Alabama?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Go ahead.
Anyway, I wrote a book. We had to write short stories, and I ended up writing a book about ironically, an alien that became president of the United States. I did, and everybody loved it.
Did you sell it to the Twilight Zone?
I should have. No, it was just it got lost. I had to illustrate it. I wasn't very good at the illustration, but the writing was pretty solid. Pretty good book.
Where's the book?
I have no idea. I think
Judy have the book?
She probably has it, or they might have lost it.
Oh.
In a move.
Okay.
Anyway, my point is, I've always been able to write. I can't do science. Science throws me off. Like, being a doctor for me was never going to be a possibility, because chemistry and such would have been the end of me. I would never have been able to.
I suck at it, but I'm fascinated by it all at the same time. Maybe because of how bad I suck at it.
I'm totally fascinated by astronomy, chemistry, medicine.
I could
listen to people talk about it for hours on end.
I guess I was talking to a buddy last week about podcasts that we were listening to, kind of recommendations, and I'll get this from him. I forget maybe somebody knows it because I'm sure it's a popular podcast. It's kind of a science podcast where they break down certain things into layman's levels where you can understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the recent episodes he was talking about was a podcast where they discuss like the brain function and the science around empathy and how you chemically either have more or less empathy than the baseline or the average. And it's something that can be moved in your mind and in everything over time. And the reason was they looked at socioeconomic levels, what levels had more or less empathy than others. That translated even into the standpoint of chemically, you know, income levels and what kind of cars people drove, having certain empathy levels and others and different things, and how there are, it's actually a scientific thing that mutates and changes in your mind that changes your ability to be empathetic toward other people.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. There is a measurement, basically, of your empathy.
Because some people are definitely more empathetic than others.
Yeah. And it's life experiences and different things that will cause those changes, obviously. But, yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, this is not, this makes sense, but it still is interesting on a chemical level. People that grew up with more means typically have less empathy for other people than people who've experienced more hardships. I mean, that's common sense.
Say that again.
People who grew up with more means, with less, what we consider normal hardships, have less empathy from when they did their studies. Which, I mean, that's not really a shock. I think that in some ways you have to experience your own struggles to be seriously empathetic to understand what someone else is going through. I mean, if you never had any difficulty in your life, you'd have a hard time understanding difficulty in general to be able to be empathetic.
Yeah, that's true.
But nonetheless, interesting from a podcast standpoint. I don't know that I'm going to run to that today, but I would kind of like to hear it. So I'll find the...
I still can't. I can't exercise to a podcast.
You haven't given it a lot of try.
I have.
Have you really?
I've tried on some Thunder podcasts to like run to them.
You care too much to listen. Meaning you have to focus on the words. You've got to run to something where you're hearing, but if you miss 3 minutes because you zoned out, who gives a crap? Like, That's why Corolla and comedy stuff is better to run to, because you're not really focused on it. I mean, you don't, you're not dying to hear what he's got to say in the next 20 seconds. You're just sort of entertained while you're doing something else. But there's no beat to help you keep a rhythm or breathing or anything if that's what you're
right,
focused on.
Right.
I mean,
the music just lets me drift off into my little place.
This would too if you weren't. That's my point. You're paying too much attention.
Maybe so.
I mean, it's like I wouldn't be able to run to like a serial podcast or something where I've really got to focus on what they're saying to understand the story. I need something light and just make some jokes, tell some stories, and it's all good. So, whatever. So what's Carson getting for Super Bowl Sunday now that you don't have an egg?
I think we just decided we would just grill hamburgers.
Well, that took a turn. You've changed a lot in the last like 12 days on what you're going to do.
It's me and him, and Campbell might or might not kind of be here, and she's doing Weight Watchers. And so we can get the 93% lean ground beef for her.
Okay.
Which sort of tastes like cardboard.
Yeah, come on. Your day's not getting changed by going 80-20 instead of 93-7. Come on.
I'm on a new belt loop.
Because you only eat 93%?
I don't know. I'm just saying what I'm doing is working.
You're exercising.
Like a fiend, man.
Well, you just answered your own question.
But I'm not eating much either. I am eating a lot of protein.
What?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Do you see where I know you saw it because we've already talked about it. One of the fathers finally lost it in the courtroom.
I did.
With Nassar.
I'm surprised it hadn't happened earlier, Frank.
I'm shocked. He just couldn't help it. He bubbled over. He asked for 5 minutes. She told him she couldn't give him five minutes. He asked for 1 minute, and she very nicely said, I can't do that. I am.
Duh.
And he said, well, then I'll just go for it myself.
The interesting part of that video, if you watch it, which most of you will.
Big, strong, agile dude.
He moved well. The shock on his daughter's face beside him as he started leaving his area for the guy was kind of sad to see in a way.
It was. The screaming and the crying.
And the other thing.
It shows you the damage that this son of a bitch did to
maybe so
this
people. Is human nature, but I don't think it would be. And I'm not. Look. It's a hard job to represent despicable human beings. I couldn't do it. I don't have the mentality to be able to give them a prayer and proper defense, fair and proper defense, if you will. Not my thing.
And you can only imagine what goes through their minds as they do their job.
Oh, they're mad at themselves.
They probably go home and take a
hot. He stepped in and kind of protected Nassar right there. He kind of blocked the father for a second before the bailiff got there. That's what I was getting at.
Oh, yeah.
I believe I'd have stepped out of the way.
Have at it.
I'd have been really slow to react.
I like the on Twitter somebody said if I'd been, everybody likes the GIF game.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'd been
the bailiff,
it would have been Stevie Wonder.
I pulled a hamstring. Can't quite get over there.
Yeah, I didn't see him. What happened?
Yeah,
I was asleep.
It looked like Nassar Bell pretty quick though. He got out of Dodge.
I felt bad for the security guys, the sheriffs or whatever, that
they have to grab him.
They have to grab him, and they're trying to tell him, relax. Yeah. We have to cuff you.
Just chill.
We get it. We understand why you want to kill him, because we're in here every day, and we're armed.
Yeah.
How easy would this be?
There's no way that guy's going to jail for any period of time, right?
Well, if he is, he's not. He's gonna go to the nice place. And the list of people willing to pay his bail today. I mean, if that, like someone said a minute ago on my deal, they said the GoFundMe would break a record.
Yeah.
I mean,
the judge is going to go up there and go, dude, look, I had to do this. Just go home.
Yeah.
Just chill.
Can you just go home? Relax. Yeah. I get it. I'm sorry.
Tough job with that judge.
Oh, she's been great. She's been great. Frankly, she's the one that they ought to trot out at the 50-yard line at the Super Bowl, and let's all give her a standing ovation. She's been awesome.
We'll close here. I mean, because of my hatred, I'm all good here, but I understand the frustration. Story from ESPN, if the Falcons collapse against the Patriots in the Super Bowl wasn't enough, Atlanta owner Arthur Blank says the disappointment didn't lessen when New England unveiled its championship rings this week. Blank told the New York Times that he was bothered. The Patriots owner, Bob Kraft, seemingly took a jab at the Falcons in each ring. I said to Robert, you didn't have to do the 28-3 thing. It kind of pissed me off. The rings have 283 diamonds in them.
Well.
Go Patriots.
You kind of can't help it. You do admire the way they troll.
The Patriots unveiled the rings last June, and their spokesman Stacey James said the rings tell the story of the game.
Oh, they do that. I'd forgotten that there's a ULM tie to the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, Eagles.
Doug Peterson, that slipped my mind.
The number of diamonds is the most used in a Super Bowl ring and more than doubles what the Patriots had in the rings in 04 and 05, the team said. Because they're becoming just hubcaps. They're trophies now. You don't wear them. You just put them away somewhere.
Brady wears them.
All at the same time.
A couple of times he does. He puts them all on.
Yeah. It's good to be Tom Brady.
When was the last time you cared less about a Super Bowl than this one?
Seahawks-Broncos, I guess. I mean, well, it's not really less. It's just in that category. I don't care.
I have no interest.
No, I take that back. I kind of wanted Peyton to win, and I kind of hate the Seahawks. So, never mind.
I always kind of liked Peyton. I wanted Peyton to win. I'd have to go back history of Super Bowls. That might be what you're pulling
up. Yeah,
I'm
going through
on
them real quick. Let's see.
I always can find a somewhat of a rooting interest.
I don't have one this week.
None, zero. Carson keeps talking about it, which is odd because Carson does not watch football. And yet he's like, hey, Dad, Super Bowl. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Okay, the last two have had a division rival in them, and I've been against the division rival.
Okay.
The one before that was New England-Seattle. I was pulling for New England, just kind of anti-Seattle, but whatever. Okay. Seattle beat the crap out of Denver. Baltimore, San Francisco.
I didn't care about that one, but there was an interest because it was Harbaugh versus Harbaugh, and this was before we hated Jim Harbaugh.
And I believe that was Patrick Willis's last game. I might have wanted Patrick to get a ring if he was playing in that game.
I think he did play in that game.
Giants, Patriots.
We all cheered for the Giants.
We did.
And there was history on the line because the Patriots were trying to go undefeated.
I tell you the last one. I did not care whatsoever. February 2011, Packers-Steelers. I had no rooting interest.
Yeah, I didn't care about that one. The one before was obviously Saints-Colts. I cared about it. Cardinals-Steelers was an underrated Super Bowl, whatever that is.
It's a great game.
Great game. Giants-New England was a great game.
I was mourning Indianapolis-Chicago.
Yeah, I had really weird feelings that day because that was the Super Bowl that I would have gotten to cover.
Yeah. So that's kind of it looking back, but maybe it'll be an interesting game. At least keep me entertained through four quarters. I'm sure we'll discuss commercials and maybe the game on Monday as we come back after the weekend. Russell, a lot of recruiting, soft verbal coming up as well today here really, really soon. I'm going to load that thing. And do me a couple favors. For anybody using our Amazon link, make sure you've refreshed and are using the current link. It is on the message board at rebelgrove.com. It is in all of our podcast content items on the front of rebelgrove.com. So just if you've got a bookmark, re-bookmark with this link if you have not already done so. I really, really appreciate. The other one's dead. This one is live and is working out. Thank you for that always. And then I hardly ever ask you about this because I know our numbers. I know we're doing well. But if you are a recent listener, do me a favor and go to iTunes, go to the podcast app, and rate and review. Just give us five quick stars. We stay on the what's hot thing. We've been there for years on the college and high school section of iTunes, but I just want to make sure we don't ever lose that standing, even though I don't typically ask you guys for that help. iTunes is based off recent reviews for the most part in its analytics, more so than overall listeners would be fine if that was the only requirement. So do me a favor if you had, and it'll take you 5 seconds, 10 seconds tops. Rate and review us there on iTunes and podcast. I really don't care if you give us five stars or not because you're listening one way or the other, but I do appreciate that, and it does help us out in a roundabout, indirect way. So thanks for all of that. Thanks for Ryan Brown for giving us an extended period of time today for the show, and we'll talk to you on Monday.